It's the Afternoon Underdogs on Cards Radio 790 KRD. Now, here's Tony Vannetti and Dave Jennings.
790 WKRD, the Afternoon Underdogs. Tony Vannetti, Dave Jennings will be back tomorrow to join me, and we'll talk to Marty Book. He got the Kentucky spread right. He said, take Kentucky, lay the points, and certainly didn't need the points. That's for sure. But tonight, we're all jacked up because it's go time, all right? Michigan State, Tom Izzo, Louisville, and Michigan State have history. There's no doubt about that. I used to be a big Tom Izzo fan, not so much anymore. And there's thoughts about his program and some things that they were hiding a couple of years ago, just didn't like it. But he's universally loved in college basketball, so we got him tonight. Louisville is 5-1. Michigan State is 5-2. And this is going to be one of those battles. So down in the blocks, you got to bring it. It's going to be a lot of fun. Now, we haven't seen a team that will run with Louisville yet, like this up and down. I'm talking about a major team in a major conference like Michigan State in the Big Ten. But the greatest thing about tonight's game is that it's at 7:16 tonight. It is at East Lansing, Michigan, and I love that we're the first game. That is fantastic. And the game will be over across the hall on News Radio 840 WHAS. It's the big game, so Jay Billis will be there. He'll be calling the game. I can take that on television. But radio, Paul Rogers, Bobby, and Nick Coffey doing some fun stuff at the halftime and after the game, so lock it in. Louisville actually leads the series 6-5. But we have, obviously I can go on and on of all the matchups with Michigan State. Matter of fact, it's a big matchup. It's maybe one of the biggest wins that, besides beating Kentucky, that Coach Mack had. It was one of his first ones that, at U of L. Remember, that was the year that they all ended up being, Louisville ended up being number one in the country. So Michigan State team the last 20 years is, to me, reminds me of Louisville teams in the 80s and 90s where, you know, you started out and took some lumps, always got some losses at the beginning of the year until he figures things out. Tom Izzo figures it out. So getting Michigan State early in the year is a good thing. Late in the year, not a good thing. Of course, recruiting's always well. It's going to be a lot of fun tonight. Again, on News Radio 840 WHAS across the hall, it's on television on the big stick, and Jay Billis is on the call. Louisville and Michigan State, I cannot wait. All right, we're also going to talk to Danny. She is the head coach of the University of Louisville Fighting Cardinal volleyball team. It is a great conversation we had just a couple of days ago. A lot of great questions as they move forward. All right, we're also going to talk to Rocky Blyer today. Rocky Blyer played for the Pittsburgh Steelers in the 1970s. He came out of Notre Dame. He was drafted somewhere in the 400s out of the draft. No one thought he would make the team. He makes the team and then gets drafted in the Army. He goes to the Army and then has a stellar career at Vietnam, but he gets injured. He jumps on a grenade. He saves people's life. He wins a star. He is awarded the Bronze Star, the Silver Star. It's a crazy, crazy amount of medals. He comes back. The doctor says, you're not going to be able to play football at a high level. That's just not going to happen. But he makes it back. He makes the roster. And then a couple of years later, they have the draft. Pittsburgh Steelers drafts, I think, 5 of the first 6 picks in that draft end up being Hall of Fame football players, and that changed the fate of the Pittsburgh Steelers. Rocky Blyer will talk about that, talk about his relationship with Rooney also, so that'll be great. And plus, we'll have Wednesday's hero. Thoughts and prayers go out to Nick Shuddy. He is a senior at Mayo High School. He's the quarterback for the team the last 2 years, and he is very, very good. And they are the favorite to win the state championship this Saturday. And Nick Shuddy, senior in high school, lost his father. So our thoughts and prayers go out to Nick Shuddy, the male high school football team, the school, and Nick Shuddy and his family, of course, for the loss of his father on the week you're playing the championship game is a tough one. So our thoughts and prayers go out to that young man. The coaching carousel continues as more rumors are flying around. Jeff Brohm, where could he go? Is he going to stay at Purdue? Who knows? Louisville looks like they're continuing to stick with Satterfield Hill at this point. No talking points. Nobody doing anything at this point. no movement of the needle. LSU, Orgeron is out. Brian Kelly is in. USC, Clay Helton is out. Lincoln Riley is in. Those are the two huge storylines, and everyone is, over the top happy for Southern California and LSU. Lincoln Riley, of course, out at Oklahoma. Who will Oklahoma hire? That is as big a team as Notre Dame and anybody else. Notre Dame is looking for a coach. So Notre Dame and Oklahoma looking for a coach. Florida's Billy Napier is the new coach. He'll replace Dan Mullen. At Washington, Jimmy Lake is out, and Kalen DeBoer is in. Texas Tech, Matt Wells is out. Joey McGuire is in. TCU, Gary Patterson, the guy that built the program at TCU, is out. Sonny Dykes is in at TCU. And then Justin Fuente is out, and Brent Pry is in at Virginia Tech, which used to be a powerhouse, but is no longer. When I grew up, Virginia Tech will knock your block off, play great defense and special teams, and you were lucky to ever get a win against Virginia Tech, and now it's they're sort of also ran in the ACC. I saw the coupon in the advertisements in the mail. They have those little clip coupons you get in an envelope. There's like 40 things in there, and one of them was the U of L home basketball schedule. They have a deal, $15 for home games at the Yum Center. I think it's fair to say that we have to have a conversation. It's not exclusive to U of L, but right now we've got issues. If you're selling home tickets to the Yum Center for $15, it'll cost you more than that to park. And we need to start to talk about the disease that U of L has, which is apathy at this point. I've talked to friends that go to the home games. I haven't been in a while. They've said, hey, look, man, I don't recognize a lot of people at the home games. It's kind of a turnover of fans in the Yum Center, and I don't know what the answer to that is. The same thing is happening at Kentucky and other teams also that are significant. Look, the top three always are Syracuse, Louisville, and Kentucky. And they're all having trouble trying to put people in the arenas. We knew that COVID would be a problem. Once you get out of a routine, you kind of mind spending that money to go back into that routine going, I can just watch the games at home. So it's a difficult situation. But when you see Louisville Cardinals on a coupon for $15 for a home seat for games, which, again, you pay more for parking and a soda than the actual ticket, I don't know what's going on with Louisville. I think Coach Mack is the guy here. I don't know what we're waiting on. I guess it's a combination of everything from COVID to not, you know, the last win was 2015 or 16 in the NCAA tournament. You can't have that many years with any postseason success. We have the NCAA still hanging over our heads. The kind of revolving doors of players is getting ridiculous. You don't get to have any relationships. When you think back, I want everybody to think back when I was growing up and in my mid-20s and 30s, the U of L basketball players would go to the mall and they'd be mobbed. They couldn't get into a store. They'd be mobbed at any place that they went. Look at Siva. Siva was a superstar in town. That kind of stardom doesn't exist now in this town for U of L players, or really even UK players were the same way. I just don't think that kind of star power is happening anymore. I mean, maybe that's some of the issue. The tickets used to be too expensive, and now they're a steal. I mean, it really is. If you've never ever wanted to watch U of L at the Yum Center, now is the time. It is really unbelievable. All right, we'll talk about college football here in a second, but I want to remind you about Edlund and Edlund. They are a real estate company in town, been around 46 years, full-service brokerage. They are going to sell your house or list your house or help you buy a house and just charge you 1% realtor commission. That's it. 1% realtor commission. That's it. They have a sliding scale at Edlund.com. E-D-E-E-L-I-E-N, sorry, Edlund, Edlund.com. You go there, they have a sliding scale. You can, let's say whatever your house, $250,000, $300,000, you can slide it to that, and it'll show you what equity you keep in your pocket instead of giving it to a real estate agent. E-D-E-L-E-N. You know the Edlund name. Edlund and Edlund, 46 years, full service, 1%. Okay, 1%. So call them right now, 599-2800, or go to Edlin.com. All right, the NFL, or I'm sorry, college football. Georgia, Bama, Cincy are all right there for the college football playoffs. Notre Dame falling back a little bit, and it's an interesting talking point. They lose their coach, and now the college football playoffs, people are saying that will be a factor in our decision. I think it's interesting because you look at Oklahoma, you look at Notre Dame, LSU fired their coach for this, so this isn't in that category. But even at Oklahoma and Notre Dame, you are not beyond losing your coach to another school. There was at one point in college football where you discussed schools where coaches would never leave. They have to be fired. Notre Dame was one of those. You didn't leave. You got fired from Notre Dame. They asked you to leave. Oklahoma, same thing. You got fired. You didn't leave on your own. You're talking about Notre Dame and Oklahoma guys both said, I'm out. I'm done. I'm going to the next guy. Notre Dame especially. Oh, my gosh. You kidding me? I mean, it makes me feel good because Louisville and Kentucky jobs forever were stepping stones. And, man, we lose our coach. I wish we were a more important program. That doesn't exist anymore. The important programs that are, we're not at risk of losing our coach out of nowhere. Guess what? Coaches are egomaniacs. They're narcissists. They're millionaires. And they're going to go wherever they want to feel comfortable. Yeah, I kind of run it through my use here. I'm out. Yeah, but coach, you're 11-1 and in the national championship hunt. Yeah, I'm out. Going to LSU. Even at Notre Dame and Oklahoma, you are not beyond douchebag narcissist coaches, period. Which now has trickled down, trickled up from places like us and Memphis and Kentucky and everything else now to that kind of level to where you always got to try to keep a guy happy or whatever it is. Not that the $6 or $7 million a year is keeping you happy. But you are now, that's the biggest takeaway I've had from this whole Brian Kelly thing, is that now Notre Dame is on the list of, yeah, you'll lose your coach too. It's kind of crazy. All right, short break. We will come back. We'll talk to the head volleyball coach at U of L. She's got the number one team in the nation, undefeated, and head into the NCAA tournament. We'll talk to her next. Hang out. 790 WKRD, the afternoon underdogs, Tony Vannetti and Dave Jennings. We'll talk to Marty Book tomorrow when Dave gets back. And we will have, coming up here in a moment, we will have the volleyball coach, University of Louisville Fighting Cardinal, number one volleyball team in America right now, undefeated as they head into the NCAA tournament. It's fantastic. We'll talk to Danny here in just a couple seconds. She dives into all this. It'll be great fun. All right. I want to send out our thoughts and prayers to Nick Shuddy. He's a senior at Male High School. We will have Coach Wolf on Friday to talk about the state championship game Saturday night against St. X. But Nick Shuddy lost his father this week. So thoughts and prayers go out to him as a high school senior playing in the biggest game. He played in last year's state championship game, lost to Trinity, and now they've got St. X this year, but lost his father. Our thoughts and prayers go out to the entire male high school football program, the school, Nick Shuddy, and his family. Okay. So I also want to shout out to Rocky Blyer, one of my idols growing up. He used to play for the Pittsburgh Steelers. He by far is the least known out of all the big superstars on Pittsburgh Steelers, except for he had an ABC Sunday night movie made about him because he was a war hero in Vietnam. He was on the Steelers, then he went to war, and I got another idea, and then he came back and played for the Steelers through all those great glory years. So we'll talk to him, and we'll do Wednesday's Hero in just a little bit, so please stick around for that. All right, right now we're going to talk to Danny. She is the head coach of the University of Louisville volleyball team that's number one in the country. A lot of great questions. Some even savvy sports writers in town like Tim Sullivan just finding out some of the rules for volleyball because this is, for high school, this is the bedrock for high school volleyball. Two or three teams in this area are always ranked in the top 10 nationally. So this is a hotbed for volleyball, number one in the country. Let's listen to Danny in the NCAA tournament and how their draw went.
Conference didn't have any slip-ups during the regular season, so really proud of our consistency over this year. You know, I think every draw is tough this year. There's so many great teams, you know, so many super seniors that are back, and it feels like there's, you know, 20, 25 teams that you could see in the Final Four, and it would not be surprising. So, you know, I think we got a tough draw, but I think every draw in this tournament is tough. So, you know, Michigan, UIC are both playing really well, and for the first and second rounds, it's definitely not going to be easy to make it to Freedom Hall.
Danny, it's Jody Dumlin. You spoke last night about the consistency and the day-to-day thing. How difficult during a season, because you've had several weeks where there could have been a look ahead to the weekend or a look ahead to next week. How difficult is it to keep that day-to-day mentality, and how much do you attribute that to being a veteran group?
Yeah, well, you said it right there. It's very difficult, and I attribute it to the veteran group. So we've got great leadership. I've been saying that all year. That has proven to be true throughout the season as we've gone on, and they're really mature about how they handle their business and just really passionate about each match. So they don't take matches off or practices off.
Hey, Danny, this is Andrew Chernoff. I know there's bigger goals for this program, especially this postseason, but what does securing that number one overall seed do for this U of L volleyball program?
You know, I think it proves that we're very, very good, and especially following it up after the last couple of years, you know, making Sweet 16s, a couple of those, and an Elite Eight. And, you know, we never wanted to be a program that's like a one-hit wonder or a program that has one magical year. It's like, how do we sustain being on top and to continue to get better and better? That's been the hard part. So, you know, I think it just says that we're continuing to get better, and we're, you know, planning to be really good for years to come. And, you know, it's been fun to make some history this season, and then to also know that there's more that can be done and there's bigger goals.
Hey, was there a point during the season where you felt like, I mean, obviously you knew you had leaders and you had, you know, a good team and you had success in the past, but was there any point during the season where you thought this could be a team that runs the table or gets very close to it?
Man, I don't know if I really had that breakthrough thought. You know, when we were on that nice run in the preseason, I just kept telling myself, well, these teams have a little less experience, and we returned everybody, and so we were expected to be better right off the bat. So it still kind of feels like we have work that we can do and room to grow. So, you know, I'm a confident, I know our team's very confident, but we're also very humble because we've seen what it's like when we're not playing great, and we've seen other teams that have really come on towards the end of the year and are playing amazing right now.
Danny, there have been 40 NCAA tournaments, all won by male coaches. What is the significance in your mind of breaking that barrier? And I guess there are three of the top 10 coached by women right now.
You know, I hate to think of it as a gender thing, but it is true that, you know, female coaches were always pulling for each other. And you hear a lot of female coaches saying, you know, we need a female to win, a woman to win this year. And when are we going to have a woman coach win the national championship? So it is cool to be in the position. You know, that's always been a goal, to be the first female to win a national championship. And to actually be in a position where that could come true is exciting. And you know, I think it is our sport is shifting a little bit. There's more and more female head coaches in the last probably 4 or 5 years. That have gotten, you know, big Power Five jobs. So I feel like that's coming right around the corner, even if it doesn't happen this year.
What do you think the barrier has been in that regard over the years?
I don't know. You know, starting families seems to always be a big thing. And the time commitment that coaching takes. But with technology, you just don't see that excuse, like I said, in the last 5 years. It just seems like that's kind of a thing of the past.
Mm-hmm. Have you deferred your own family to pursue this?
No.
Okay. On a different topic, tell me a little bit about the history with ICO and how, I guess there's a Nebraska connection there somewhere.
Yeah, so she came to camp when I was an assistant coach at Nebraska. Her dad actually ran track at Nebraska, and so that's how her and I met. And, you know, when I got the job at Louisville, I wasn't sure that Aiko would have the opportunity to go to Nebraska. So I called her and convinced her to come to camp and here, and she loved it. And next thing you know, she was committing. So that's the story with her. But I always was trying to convince my boss at Nebraska to give her a chance, because she was a really raw athlete and somebody that needed a lot of work. But I felt like it was a big risk, but big reward. So I was very excited to have the opportunity to make that come true here.
Did you see her play in Jamaica, or just camps, or what?
Just camps before she committed. And then after she signed, we went and watched her in Jamaica. And there's really not a lot of high-level volleyball in Jamaica. So she was playing with her mom on a club team. So if that tells you anything.
Tell me a little bit about her progress as an athlete. I mean, she's obviously an important contributor now. How far has she come?
Oh, she's come a long ways, and being able to redshirt her was really huge, and I felt like she could develop without having the pressure of playing. And that year, she probably could have helped us in moments, win matches, but we knew her long-term development was a lot more important. You know, and I think for her, it's the speed of the game, and it's more live reps, because as you can see physically, she has all the tools as anybody in the country. It's just the live reps and live play that she's behind a little bit. And but when she's dialed in, she can definitely take over a match, blocking and attacking, and she puts us in the mix with the best teams in the country just because of her physicality.
Are there parts of her game that are still raw by your definition?
Of course, but you can say that about everybody. But for her, it's ball handling and little plays, you know, that you can't really train, that just happen in matches.
Thank you.
Yep. Danny, how big for you? I know you just got another honor, the ACC Coach of the Year. What does that mean to you?
You know, the Coach of the Year it's exciting and it feels good, but at the end of the day, it's just a reflection of the team. You know, and I see these awards, and of course, it's like, man, I feel like we could have gotten more of those big awards. We're undefeated, but, you know, we are really very, very balanced. And so sometimes that like hurts our team a little bit, or it hurts for postseason awards when I don't think it should. So I don't know, this year in particular, probably more than any other year, I would say the Coach of the Year is way more of like team and staff of the year, because they've done a lot of the work.
Danny, can you just kind of go over what Tori means? And maybe not even as far as on the court, her leadership is so important.
Yeah.
And then she's so good on the court.
Yeah. Her leadership is a huge factor for us. And she's really grown as a leader. And a lot of people that have followed us throughout the years can probably see that and notice it, just how good she is this year. And best thing about Tori, she's very coachable, and not just on the court, but off the court. And I think our team sees that, so she's earned their respect, and she's taught them how to be coachable, which is a huge reason why, you know, everybody says your culture looks so great. And I think that starts with her and starts at the top, and she's never too good to make a change, which at her level, you know, is rare.
Back to what Andrew's question earlier about what does this mean in that. And again, I know you have goals. You want to win you want to win a championship in the end, but all the attention you guys have gotten this year in the number one seed, what does that do as far as, have you seen a spike in the recruiting efforts? Has it helped yet? I mean, or is that something that comes down the road?
No, I really feel like it comes down the road. And like I said, you've seen more interest in recruiting, but you know, you got to prove yourself as a program over multiple years. And that's what we're just beginning that. And so I think, you know, I would say that comes further down the road, but it certainly helps. And, you know, even from little things like social media followers, and that's all big for recruiting. And so this year has really helped with those.
Danny, I heard you talking about Scott. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, thanks, Tim. You guys have obviously won five games against top five teams. How big is that going into this NCAA tournament, just having that experience of playing great teams and winning a lot of those matches?
Oh, it's huge, and I'm so thankful we scheduled the way we did and we were able to be successful because, yeah, that was 4 months ago, but that still gives us confidence. We can look back on those experiences and those matches and reflect on what we did well, and and we played in front of some really big crowds, which is going to be helpful. We know we're going to have great crowds at this NCAA tournament. So, you know, like I said, those were really important, and those kind of gave us the life of that we, you know, earned the right to be where we are, and that we have the pieces to get it done.
I was starting to ask about Elena Scott. I heard you on the podcast talking about how few mistakes she's made. As a freshman, putting her in the lineup in fairly responsible position, did you have any trepidation about that, or did you see enough of her to know that she could handle it?
I think I saw enough of her. She was really good from day one. When she walked in our gym, I knew she would be a great libero. You know, it was just more, when would she be a great libero? I guess I am very surprised by her confidence in the position that she hasn't played. And you can just tell when she's on the court, if she makes a mistake, like her facial expression does not change. And like her mental game does not waver. And so she's been really impressive in that way, more than just her skill, you know, as a freshman libero and in that position. It's easy to get rattled as a libero, and I have not seen her get rattled.
Mm-hmm. I was trying to figure out your substitution pattern the other night, and it's a little more complex than I could follow. Do the players know automatically what happens, you know, at each rotation? Or do you have to make calls in the middle of the match?
You know, we have our lineup, so you see two DSs, Aiden Bartlett and Alexa Hendricks. They know they're going to play and when they're going to play, but there are certain other substitutions that they might not know when, but we do practice those moments quite a bit to make sure they're ready. So when we tell them it's time to go in, they know what they're doing and what their expectation is.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a statistic that would show how many or what proportion of matches your libero plays?
No, you know, your libero plays though 5.5 rotations of every match and every point. You can't sub your libero. So you have to wait in between sets. So you can't sub them like during the set.
Okay. Excuse my ignorance.
Good question though.
Well, I'm trying to learn.
Love it.
You're forcing us to pay attention.
I love it.
Hi, Danny. You've talked about Tori's leadership throughout the season and just how much it's grown since she came to Louisville. Can you kind of walk us through what those conversations with her have looked like from the time she got onto campus until her senior year?
Sure. You know, when she got to campus, it was a little bit different recruiting process because we weren't necessarily looking for a setter, and especially a transfer setter. So, you know, when she emailed us, it's like, okay, if she's interested, let's bring her to campus and learn about her. And once she came, you know, we knew she had something special. It was just, you know, where does she fit? And I told her she had to be ready for any role she might play, which could mean sitting the bench or running the show. And her first year here, we were in a 6-2, which she was splitting the position. And then she didn't play for a little bit. By the end of the year, she ended up earning the starting spot. And I think what kept her in and out of the lineup her first year was, you know, some leadership, and she was pressing really hard to be a great leader. And, you know, she was very vocal, and sometimes on women's teams and any team, you know, you got to be able to handle tough moments and learn more about your teammates and how they handle it. And so she really took the time to learn how to handle each of her teammates and how to communicate. And, you know, we watch film, and sometimes we'd watch her body language and, you know, how could you be better here? And do you see that? And then do you see your teammates' reactions? And so, you know, it's really impressive that she could take all that feedback and make such great changes. And, you know, become the leader that she is, and at the same time, you know, working to earn that starting role, which wasn't easy either. So, you know, when I look back at her 3 years, it's been really incredible, just the amount of progress she's made as a player, as a leader, and as a person. So just incredibly proud of her. And we certainly would not be here if she had refused to make changes or, you know, acted like she was already too good to make those changes.
Watching the film and her body language, was those like one-on-one sessions with you and her, or was that in a team setting?
You know, those were one-on-one, but we do have a lot of meetings with the team, and, you know, her team knew and that we were working with her on leadership and those type of moments. So we don't hide a lot in our program, and, you know, we build trust with transparency. But really specific things are definitely, we're one-on-one.
790 WKRD. Boy, we got a game tonight. The Afternoon Underdogs is excited. Oh, yeah. In my old age, I'm excited. It's 7:15 is the game time. Louisville and Michigan State. I love it, man. This is Tom Izzo and all that, man. So this is going to be great. I can't wait. Game's over on News Radio 840 WHS. Oh, the Big Stick, it's on TV. Jay Billis is on the call. This is going to be a battle. This is going to be fun. Will they raise their level of play like they did in Bahamas when they won the championship over Maryland and Mississippi State? Will they lower their level of standard like they did in some of those pre-con games that were just awful to watch? I don't know the answer to that. I do know that this is going to be a hell of a game tonight. But before we talk about that, you know, people in need, especially this time of year, depression is high, kids need help at home, and a toy can really kind of figure those things out. I believe, Dwight, we've got somebody on the line that can help us with that.
Yes, sir. How you doing today, Dwight?
Man, it's good to hear from you. I want to say thank you to you and everyone at Mosby Towing and Transport for what you all do for the community. And you do this every year. Tell us about the third annual Towing for Tots, how people can participate and do some good for the neighborhood.
Man, it's a great program, and thank you guys for getting to help us get the message out. You know, I did last year, and the turnout was great. Boxes and boxes of toys for the kids and the families out there that needed it. So this Saturday, we're going to leave our place with a parade of tow trucks, probably 70, 80 tow trucks, going to the old Kmart on Poplar Road where everyone can meet at. And bring a new unwrapped toy. We'll have boxes there to collect them in, and we take them down there to the. This year, we're doing the women's and children's shelter is going to get all the benefit.
Mm-hmm.
We're also going to be raffling off a balance bike from the people over at CC Power Sports, our partners over there.
Mm-hmm.
They donated it, and so it's $5 a raffle ticket for that. They can buy those over there. We're currently raffling as well here. We're raffling off a 55-inch TV as well for $5 a ticket. And it's a great cause, man. Like I said, this Saturday, we'll be at the old Kmart. It's a big lots now. I'm probably 525, 530. And we'll hang out there for an hour or so, hour and a half, and having a good time and get these toys together for these kids this year.
And the motorcycle you're talking about, I've seen a picture. It's like it's for an 8 years old and older. It's a Indian motorcycle, and it looks as real as it gets. So you get chances on that.
But the Women and Family Center is important.
Oh,
it is
definitely
because a lot of these families, these women and children, they leave in the middle of the night. They can't take anything with them. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times they get to the shelter, they have nothing. And when you're a kid, you're now in a shelter, you're not in your home, which is a better situation. But getting toys for these kids and families is fantastic, dude. Great job.
Yeah, absolutely. When we say they get to the shelter with nothing, often we mean no sleeping clothes,
yeah,
no toothpaste.
They just got to get out of the house.
No toothbrush, nothing. They just got to get out of that situation. But, okay, so, again, run down the details before we let you go. It's Towing for Tots. Let's do some good for the neighborhood.
Absolutely, man. It's a great cause. And when you go down there, and the week after that, we actually caravan the toys down there with a parade of wreckers again. And when you see the kid, they know we're coming. We got Santa Claus on there and the elf and Miss Claus and all that. We do it right. and to see those kids line up, man, they're waving. Some of them are crying. I mean, it's a great thing, man, and just to be part of it. It's the people at Mosby's, my wife, Christy Johns, Darla Dawson, Jody Judy, those are the folks that are really behind the scenes putting it all together, making it happen. And we thank everybody over at CC Power Sports. We're also giving a lot of gift cards and stuff away over there at the end. So lots of prizes that we're giving away. And we appreciate everyone in the community support. And thank you, Dwight and Tony and WHS, for helping us get the word out.
His name is Brian Johns, and the name of the team there is Mosby Wrecker Service, and you do this every year. Thank you. God bless you, all the men and women at Mosby. Brian, thanks a million. Have a great day, okay?
Great job. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. You guys have a great Christmas, man.
There you go.
There you go is right. That is fantastic. All right, folks, don't forget, Edlin & Edlin is your real estate company. They will take care of you there. 46 years of full-service brokerage, man. 46 years. That's why you know. I started working with them, and I started asking around about people and doing my homework, and everyone knew Edlin & Edlin, everybody. And the last couple of years, they've gone to something different. They are only going to charge you 1% realtor commission when they sell your house, okay? So list your house with Edlin and save money. Not save money. Keep the money in your pocket. The equity stays in your pocket. Edlin.com or call them at 599-2800. Don't list with someone else. This is a full-service company that is only charging 1% realtor commission. It's really a huge deal. Get your house sold. You can list it. Go to the website, Edlin.com. Okay, tonight, Michigan State and Louisville. This is going to be a lot of fun. This is one of those games, there's a lot of storylines. Mac's first game back, how much homework did he do on Michigan State? He beat them last time in his first year, which was a humongous win. Remember that? Louisville is 5-1. They look pretty good the last two games. Are they going to be due for a letdown? I don't know that. Michigan State looks the part. 7 feet, 230. 6'8", 230. 6'8", 230. These are big kids in the blocks. They're going to punch you in the face if you need to get a rebound. That was the big switch from the Bahamas that wasn't happening before. The flip in the Mississippi game is that Louisville out-rebounded Maryland. I'm sorry, not Mississippi State, Maryland. They out-rebounded Maryland by a huge margin, and they needed that margin to win the game. Can Louisville get nasty and get in the blocks with Michigan State will be the question. Tonight's game is at 7:15. Too excited. It's at East Lansing, so they have the advantage there. But Louisville played great on the road so far, so hopefully that will continue. Michigan State, I love an early matchup that just is really sexy. And, of course, we're just a couple of weeks away from Kentucky. These non-conference games are important. Listening to Nick Coffey this morning, he said, look, Mississippi State, cheer for them. Maryland, cheer for them in their conferences, because at the end of the year, I used to think a pretty good U of L team didn't need luck to get in the NCAA tournament. I guess we do now. But we don't. We need these teams to do well. You got to cheer for Michigan State after tonight if Louisville wins that game, okay? I can't wait for this game tonight. They're going to run up and down the floor. It's Jay Billis is at the in the arena. It's one of those games, okay? So you got Michigan State tonight off the big championship. Then you turn around and start ACC play on Saturday with NC State at 2 p.m. This is awesome. Back-to-back. This is what I wanted. This is what I've been waiting for. So back-to-back, Michigan State and NC State. And then you got DePaul and then whoever, Southeast Louisiana, Western, and then Kentucky on the 22nd, and then back to ACC play with Wake Forest. Back after this on 790 WKRD. Dave Jennings will be back tomorrow. I am Tony Vannetti, and we're on the Card Station. Huge game tonight! Michigan State and Louisville. I am in. Come out! I'm a little giddy today.
Are you giddy?
I'm feeling good, dude. I'm so excited to talk to one of our guests today.
Oh.
And now we've got some good guests coming on the show. But Rocky Blyer is one of my heroes. I was born in 69, so 1970s and early 80s were my time to pick teams, and Steelers were my team. And somehow, the fullback on a team not of just Hall of Famers, but Hall of Fame personalities, Terry Bradshaw, Mean Joe Green, Jack Lambert, Lynn Swan. These are names that everyone knows. The Franco Harris, the fullback, had a movie made about him on ABC Sunday Night Movies.
And we're talking about a place in time where it was Cowboys or Steelers fans. Yeah. Everybody else, meh.
I cheered. Steelers were the bad guys. They were the ones that were like, we don't want to win the game, but we want to kind of hurt everyone else in the process. And then America, of course, was there. Why is there a hole in the new Dallas stadium so God can watch his team play?
Oh.
But I did get to meet Roger Staubach a couple of years ago, which was the quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys at that time. And to tell you the truth, you want to talk about an American hero. Roger Staubach graduated from Annapolis, went in the Navy, Heisman Trophy winner, Super Bowl winner. Awesome dude.
Same thing with Rocky Blyer. Blyer, though, is a Bronze Star winner, all kinds of stuff.
Oh, no. Yeah, he jumped on a grenade. We'll ask again. I watched a little bit of the movie last night, and I was like, I miss the all shucks kind of all-American movie. You know, it's just kind of like, I guess those days are long gone. All right, so we'll have him after our Wednesday's hero. So, and Wednesday's hero is a good one. So you'll hear about that one. I do want to shout out and send our thoughts and prayers out to Nick Shuddy. Is a senior at Male High School. He is the quarterback for the team, the undefeated Male Bulldogs. He was quarterback last year and this year, 2 year starter. He lost his father this week. And this week, of course, is the week of the state championship game.
Oh, man. There was a story similar to this a couple of years ago. The kid.
Oh.
What was that?
You talking about
the kid wound up doing very well in the game, hit a home run or something.
I don't know, but I hope for the best for Nick Shuddy and his family and losing your pops.
In high school, I know exactly.
The week of the state championship game, and you know exactly what it's like.
Yeah, I know what it's like to lose your dad in high school. I lost mine when I was 15, and it's tough, man. It's tough.
And you went to school the next day.
I sure did.
Of course, 3 weeks later, you cut school to smoke cigarettes and break windows on Dixie Highway. Well, but the day after your dad died, you were there.
I laced up those moccasins. I tucked
boots or shoes?
No, they were the moccasin boots.
Okay, boots. All right. There was two different types.
Are you kidding me? Yeah, they were the brown suede moccasins. I tucked my jeans in those moccasins. I laced them up, and I put bandanas on all the sides of it, and I put some Aussie buttons on, and off to school I went.
Brad Pitt wears those jeans and the moccasins in the movie, the California movie that won Best Picture or whatever with Leo.
Oh, with the K, California?
No. The last one, it was the California one about the 1960s, late 60s California. So he wore moccasins and jeans. All right, so busy show today. You commented earlier today on the waterfront project that's going to happen down in Portland. So it's a natural, obviously, if you're going to fix up the waterfront, which we grew up in this town in the 70s, we looked like New Jersey, and now it looks pretty cool. So, and there's a lot of events, obviously a lot of events down there. So they're going to expand it to Portland.
And the best thing that happens when you do your waterfront development like that, all the crime goes away.
Well, there are developers in Portland gobbling up empty houses now, fixing them up. I did a TV hit a couple of years ago and was astonished in Portland how many 20-somethings were paying big bucks, over $200,000 for houses in Portland. And I was like, this is happening? They're like, oh, they're buying up houses.
I'm all for that. Let developers go in on their own freaking dime.
But the park does help that.
Here's what I'm saying. I'm saying let's take care of things that need to be taken care of first that benefit all of the taxpayers. I mean, here, just look at this last budget, how much waste there is in it. And then you always hear from out of City Hall, oh, well, listen, unfortunately, we have a shortcoming in the budget and then we can't do this and fund that. We're going to raise taxes. And then you see crap like this. Hey, let's build a hot air balloon park.
Ooh, that's a great idea.
Okay, see, I shouldn't
have said hot air balloon park. Someone get Fisher and Bashir on the phone because a hot air balloon park would be fantastic. Only 130 years late, but yes.
Hey, and while we're on the subject,
you get to have your own balloon, Dwight.
Well, okay,
you can put it in whatever shape you want.
Hey, while we're at it, we're talking about Metro Councils. Let me just go ahead and remind everybody who voted to put the interrupters back in the budget.
Well, what's that list, Dwight?
Okay, these are the people on Metro Council that said, you know what? We should take $8 million and fund a program that pays convicted felons $60,000 a year And by the way, the last time we did this program, several of these interrupters, shockingly, broke the law. Some of these crimes were included raping women. So these are the brain trust, the geniuses that voted to put that back in the budget. Bill Hollander, Democrat. Ja'Cory Miller, Democrat. Paula McCraney, Democrat. Casey Armstrong, Democrat. Cindy Fowler, Democrat. Nicole George, Democrat. Marcus Winkler, Democrat, and Brett Ackerson, Democrat. Those are the people that voted to get the interrupter program back into the city budget for $8 million. So, anytime I can remind you, I will.
I got you. All right, do you have your, can I get the dun-dun-dun ready?
Oh!
I'm going to need you to get that ready for me because I got my next story and we're going to have, it's a very dramatic story about a trip to a restaurant. But while you're looking for that, Rick, have you ever, Rick is with us, Dave will be back tomorrow, you're going to Cabo. Deer population is up over 1 million in Kentucky alone now. Have you ever hit a deer with your car?
No. Never hit a deer with a car. Seen a lot of deers off the road.
But. Right. I'm knocking on wood right now because it can be really, really bad.
Oh, my gosh.
Here's a tip I heard from AAA yesterday. They said if you see the deer coming out in the last second, you only have a second to react. Don't hit the brakes. Do you know why you don't hit the brakes?
No.
Your face.
I was trying to figure
now
it out.
I know. Now
you know what my teacher's.
Now I know
like.
What your algebra teacher looked like.
Oh, come on.
Dwight,
you think I was in an algebra class?
Know what the answer is? You went. You did the. Your eyes went to the ceiling and went, no. No.
But you tried to give me a little bit of credit by saying that's what your algebra teacher. I was in YD.
Okay.
Mr. Freshman.
No algebra, right?
He was asking me questions like this. All right, Dwight, you're up. What color is blue?
So don't hit the brakes because if you hit the brakes, your car can go down a couple inches, and that means the deer can come up over your hood and smash into your windshield and kill you. Right, you got you ready? You ready? The deer can come up over your hood and smash into the windshield,
stabbing you with his deer antlers.
Now, don't speed up. Again, this is all really quick movements. Don't speed up, but take your foot off the gas. A lot of times, that's the same rule when you hit ice. When you're hitting ice, you take your foot off the gas. Don't hit the brakes. Kind of try to wade through it, water too. But that's deer. 1 million deer right now in Kentucky. You got to watch after the deer because I know a lot of people that have hit one, and sometimes it ends pretty badly.
I actually keep corn nuts in my car, and I will throw a handful of corn nuts on the side of the road, and the deer will be distracted by the corn nuts.
Dr. Fauci, attract the deer to the side of the road then?
I don't get what you're saying.
That's not a good idea.
Go for the corn nuts.
Okay, I don't think I'm going to.
Yeah, I'm not doing that.
You're not an expert on everything, you know. It's crazy.
Yes, I am.
All right, you ready with my dun-dun-dun?
Oh, yeah, I got you. Right here.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. Restaurant customer faces backlash after bringing on their own condiments.
Hey! Put a pin in that because Susan and I do something similar. Go ahead.
The student dined with a group of friends at a pizza place. The shop provided free cups of garlic sauce. How nice. But the group didn't want garlic sauce.
We don't like your garlic
sauce. They wanted ranch dressing.
Ah! Wait a minute. I think you can get ranch dressing at pizza places, but go ahead.
When the restaurant said, sure, you can have the ranch dressing, but it'll be $1.
And if you got a tight wad like Susan Tyler Witten,
you got a bottle in your purse.
I said, no, that's what I tell her. I said, just put it in your purse. But she insists, no, I better keister this in. No, honey, no.
It's a good way for no one else to use
it. Listen, sweetheart, just put it in your purse. I'm telling you, nobody's going to search it when we walk in.
Well, these are students, so they have no money. So it's they're like, we're not paying a dollar, dude. Everyone else gives us just sides of ranch. What's your deal? So the guy is getting backlash, not the restaurant, when he posted on Reddit. So I just wanted to remind you that of some places don't give you the ranch.
Well, listen, it's going to be Christmas time before you know it. Today's the first day of December, and that leads me to this. 210 million packages were stolen from porches.
Say what?
210 million packages were stolen from porches in the U.S. last year. 61% of Americans have been victim to package theft in the last 12 months. I mean, what do you do?
I mean,
we have the Ring doorbell.
So these places like UPS and FedEx and all that, they put it in a box. You can't tell what's in it. So you're either getting a tie or some sort of electronics or a headphones or whatever, but you don't know what's in it. So you're taking a chance,
right,
of going up on somebody's porch where you can get shot. Guess what? Clue bad guys. The porch is included in the home. So a homeowner is legally, I believe, legally, they can shoot you if you're on their property and you're there to steal something.
You've been to my house. As you approach my front door, there is a sign there with a shooting target.
Yeah.
And it says, nothing in this house is worth losing your life over.
Yeah. And then that big voice from the RoboCop guy says, you will step back or die.
Remove your pants.
What?
What does that have to do with anything?
I'm here to pick up.
Amazon deliveries make up 53.9% of the thefts.
Oh, my gosh.
Just think about that. FedEx comes in with a distant second at 15%, and our partners right here that we love, my alma mater, UPS. UPS comes in at third with only 11% of their packages being stolen. But think about that. More than half of the packages that are stolen off porches or Amazon. So that's telling in a couple of ways. Number one, that tells how many people are using this damn thing and using Amazon, because 53% of the thefts come from Amazon. But think about, Amazon sells things less expensive generally than some other places can.
Yeah.
And they're still tacking on, because you know they're not eating that cost.
Right.
They're still passing on to us.
Yeah. Now, they're combating it. If you notice, if you order something from Amazon, you'll get a text message or email that says, we're seven stops away, we're three stops away, and then it'll send you a picture of your package on your porch. It says, tell us how we did the second it hits the porch. It's incredible technology, to tell you the truth, that you can do this for all these customers and all these deliveries. Just look in your neighborhood. It's the most thing you see in a neighborhood, which is either FedEx or UPS drivers up and down your street all day long.
And Amazon.
And Amazon vans just dropping stuff off. That's the most you see. It's crazy. And they are combating it, because now once I see it's seven stops away, if someone's at the house, I'm like, look for the package. Because now people are driving up and down the roads going, ooh, there's a package. Boom, I'm taking it.
Well, especially in Christmas time,
Tony. Oh, no.
But you've seen my house. I've got security cams everywhere on the outside. And then we went ahead and got the Ring doorbell. And I remember it was last December. We had somebody trying to steal a package off my front porch. But thank goodness it was Susan's Adam and Eve delivery, and the guy threw his back out.
It's too heavy.
He threw his back out trying to pick it up. Yeah.
Well, they had to have two or three guys deliver it.
I know.
Yeah. But since she's a platinum member of Adam and Eve, they do that delivery for free, I believe.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. They have a truck, and you hear beep, 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 and then Susan Tyler Witten signed for this.
Yeah.
It's tough, man. We got to get the neighbors to haul it up the stairs.
All right, man. It's time for the joke of the day. And don't forget, we will have Wednesday's hero in Rocky Blyer, former Pittsburgh Steeler and war hero in Vietnam. He got drafted. He was a Pittsburgh Steeler, and he was about to make the team. And he got Coach Noel got a call from his house that said, hey, your mom and dad need you to come home. He goes, why? He goes, you're going to the Army. He's like, what? Because you've been drafted.
And by the way, after he got injured in the war, they said, you'll never play football again.
Yeah, and we'll talk to him about it. I'm pretty excited about it. All right, joke of the day.
All right, you ready to get a joke of the day?
Rick, you got the thing there?
Yeah, I got it right here.
All right, there you go.
Hey, fellas.
Hey, hope today's joke is better than yesterday's.
I can't help you there, but we'll go ahead and do it.
All righty.
All right. Hey, fellas.
Hey, Dwight.
Three couples are trying to get married at the same church.
Okay.
So they go to meet with the priest. The priest goes, you know what? Three couples, we'll just counsel all of you all at once.
Okay, great.
But let me tell
group
you.
Group counseling.
You listen to me, you three couples. If you wish to be married in my church, you must go at least 1 month without having sex.
Oh, my gosh.
That's what the priest said. 1 month without having sex.
Holy cow. Susan said, great.
Right.
Thank you.
She said, I can do 1 month.
Thank you. Are you sure it shouldn't be 60 days?
1 month later, all three couples returned to the church, and that's when the priest, he asked the elderly couple. So, I'm not doing an accent. He asked the elder couple.
You're going to do the Irish guy,
weren't
you? I was
going to try to be the Irish guy.
You're going to say, hey, how'd you do then?
So the Irish priest said, okay, elderly couple, how did your month go? Yeah, the elderly couple says, ah, you kidding me? We're elderly people. We had it easy. 1 month was a piece of cake. What? How about 2 months? He goes, no, that'll do. That's a horrible accent. Accent's gone.
It adds to it.
Then the middle-aged couple, how did you do? Well, it was difficult. You see, we're middle-aged kids, and yeah, we made it through it, though. It just wasn't easy. Then he comes to the young couple.
Uh-oh.
How about you, young couple, boyfriends? Ah, we couldn't do it, father. Huh? Couldn't do it? Tell me why. I said, well, my girlfriend had a can of corn, you see.
Oh, no.
Yeah, she accidentally dropped that can of corn, and when she bent over to pick it up, wow, bam!
Oh, my gosh.
That was that, priest.
That's it, these young kids.
The priest says, you're not welcome my church, young man. He goes, well, we're not welcome in the supermarket either.
That is your joke of the day. December 1st, if you believe it, 2021. This year is almost over. All right, folks, before we get to a break, I want to remind you about Edeland and Edeland. They are a full-service real estate company. They've been around for 46 years, and they are proud of that, by the way. And about a year ago, they went to this new model that shook up the industry, and it is shaking up the industry now. You get the full-service treatment, but they will list your house for 1%. That's right, 1% realtor commission instead of 3. So what does that save you? On average, about $8,000. But that's the $8,000 of equity you've earned in your home that should be in your pocket and not in the pocket of the real estate agent. Do you get the full service treatment at Edeland and Edeland anyway for the 1%? Yes, you do. So call them at 599-2800 or go to edeland.com. Edeland and Edeland, around for 46 years. Keep your money in your pocket. Don't give it to a real estate agent. They'll get your house sold. List it with Edeland and Edeland. Back after this on 790 WKRD. Marine Corps. Name of the story is Holding East Hill, North Korea, 1950. During World War II, Reginald Meyer saw action in the Marine Corps' invasions of Guadalcanal, the Marshall Islands, and Okinawa. After the war, he served with the occupation forces in northern China. In the fall of 1950, Major Myers was the executive officer for the 3rd Battalion, 1st Marines in Korea. A veteran of Incheon Landing in 1950 and fighting around Seoul. By November 29, 1950, an outnumbered combined Army and Marine force had been battered for 2 days of Chinese attacks at the Chosin Reservoir. A small force of men from the Army Signal Corps and other non-combatants had been assigned to defend the East Hill, the high ground overlooking the U.S. base at Hengaruri. It had been routed shortly after midnight. A few hours later, some 4,000 Chinese Communist troops were on the East Hill, poised to rain artillery fire down on the weakened Americans below. Meyer's commanding officer ordered him to assemble force made up of any personnel he could find and take them up the hill. As a steady snowfall accumulated in temperatures reaching 20 degrees below zero, Myers reorganized a demoralized remnant troops who had just been driven off the East Hill and added reinforcements from several Army and Marine units, putting together a ragtag force of about 250 men in all. So 250 versus 4,000 going uphill, slipping on ice. They started the steep ascent into the dark while the enemy shot down at them from above. Without a command structure to help him organize his makeshift unit, Meyer struggled to get the men to the top of East Hill before daybreak. By 10 a.m., he had gotten the 80 soldiers still capable of fighting near the crest of the hill. But because of the fierce enemy machine gun fire, he couldn't advance any farther. He called in artillery fire and warplanes.
Six, this is F-13. The jet's being bombed now. There, you got about 30 seconds to start station. Get your people back and head down. It's going to be a big one.
Which strafed and bombed the enemy, but though the Chinese took heavy casualties, they were still able to keep Meyer's depleted force from taking full command and control of the hill. After a grueling day-long battle, Meyer's fell back to a defensive position as night approached. Eventually, he was relieved by Marine Captain Carl Sitter, who would also receive the Medal of Honor for his actions in finally securing the position. Meyer's leadership of a group of men who had never trained or fought together resulted in 600 enemy killed and 500 wounded, and kept the Chinese troops from focusing their firepower on Hangaruri. Although amazingly he wasn't hurt in the assault on the East Hill, Meyer's was badly injured several months later in the spring of 1951. It wasn't so much of the pain that he remembered later on, but the sensation of the doctors cutting off his clothes to treat him from all the shrapnel wounds. He returned to the United States shortly afterwards and was awarded the Medal of Honor by President Harry Truman on October 29th of that year. Following the Korean War, Meyer's continued to serve in many positions with the Corps before he retired as a colonel in 1967. Today's hero is Reginald R. Meyer's. He was born November 26, 1919 in Boise, Idaho. He died October 23, 2005 in Juniper, Florida. The name of the story is Holding East Hill. Oh, wow. So, first thing before we get to Rocky and J.D., it's a suicide mission. So he has to collect 250, whoever can fight. So he's got Army and Marines. They've never fought together or trained together. He puts 250 guys together to go uphill, which is, again, the kill box.
Right.
At 20 degrees below zero and fight 4,000 Chinese.
Unbelievable. But we tell the stories here every single Wednesday of our veterans. They are cherished to us on this show as we bring in right now.
Rocky Blyer. Rocky, how are you, sir?
Hey, Rocky.
I'm fine this morning. What a wonderful story. I got a chance to listen to it.
Oh, man, we do it every Wednesday, and I have a long list to get to, and I don't think we're ever going to get them done, Rocky, but it's important to us that we...
That's all right. Yeah. That's all right. You got a list.
Yeah.
Hey, Rocky, where are you calling from, incidentally?
I'm calling from Pittsburgh.
Oh.
There you go.
All right, Rocky, I got to start with this because I'm going to fanboy a little bit. I've been doing radio and television for 30 years, Rocky Blyer, and I rarely get a little excited about doing an interview, but today the other day when I found out you were going to be on the call, I remember counting the hours down to the ABC Sunday night movie to watch your movie, having your jersey, having the Steelers gear. I still find it amazing, and that's where my first question will go, Rocky, is with all of the superpower Hollywood type personalities on that team, they made a movie about the fullback. Not too bad.
Yeah, no kidding.
that's right. Being at the right place, right time, whatever the story might be, you're right.
Well, let's talk a little bit about your personal story, and I want to talk about the events that are going on in a couple of Saturdays. Tony and I are going to be a part of as well. But let's talk about your rookie season. You get in the rookie season with Art Mooney and the gang. They hire you for the Steelers. But then is it after your first season that you get drafted to go to the Vietnam War?
Well, no, actually, the situation was, it was 1968. I was a very highly touted draft pick by the Pittsburgh Steelers. I was the 417th person picked in the draft that year. I was a 16th round draft choice. So from the beginning, my chances of being able to make that team were not very favorable, I suppose. But losingest team in the history of the NFL for the first 40 years of its existence.
Yep.
So who knows what's going to happen? Yep. Anyway, I make the team. And I make the team. The interesting thing was that probably I guess the high point of my career at that time was it was in training camp, and I was leaving a meeting, and Bill Austin was the head coach. And after the meeting, he pulled me aside. He said, "Listen, Rocky," said, "we got this letter in the mail. And it was accidentally opened, it was my 1A classification. Now, for the military people, they understand, but today, most people don't realize the fact is that you were eligible for the draft back then, and so you had a classification, you had a student deferment, but everybody was eligible for the draft in the military services after high school when you're 18. Anyway, so he said, we got this letter in the mail accidentally, and it was my 1A classification for my student deferment. He said, we think you're good enough to make this team, and we'll take care of this for you. Whatever taking care of this for you meant.
Okay. They tried to get you out of the damn draft.
And so what I'm thinking is the only thing I heard is you're good enough to make this team. So the time goes on, and ultimately a couple a month or so went by, and I go, okay, have you heard anything? No, not yet. Okay, and then another month goes by. I say, we're having a little problem. You know, the congressman got defeated, the colonel retired. You know, so all our contacts, whatever it is, but also was the and I'm thinking, from my perspective is that possibly join the reserve or the National Guard. That's, that was an option at that time to be able to, to do that, take care of that responsibility. And so then it wasn't until, November came by. It was December, actually. And so I got this letter, I opened it up, and it said, "Greetings. We'd like to inform you that you've been inducted into the armed services of the country." And it was after the 10th game of the season, and to report the next day, actually.
Wow.
Into the armed services. And wow. That was my career.
You go overseas. We go overseas, and then obviously you are injured in Vietnam, and they told you correctly. They because we got about 10 more minutes in this interview, I want to make sure we get all of it in, including the event we're doing. but we got it because your life is so incredible. Yeah. We got to get to all of it.
What
so
this you means got is, injured. Rocky, we need you back.
We need you back for another hour. So, but you got injured in Vietnam, and they told you you're not going to play football after this.
So the injuries that I got injured twice, and it was the same action. I got hit two different times, and we got shot through the left leg, and then a grenade blew up through my right foot and knee and thigh. So the prognosis was the damage done to my foot and the nerve damage that had taken place, et cetera, et cetera. That when I asked, what's the chances of coming back and playing? The good doctor said, "Don't worry about it. You'll have a normal life," whatever that meant. Don't expect to get back on the grid. You just won't have the strength nor the flexibility to do the things that are necessary in his mind to be a running back in the NFL. And so it just kind of sucked that hope out, out of my plans. But the interesting thing was that, and this is part of the story, which was, honestly, God, 2 days later, I got a postcard in the mail, and it had two lines on it. It said this: "Rock, team's not doing well. We need you."
Oh, Art Rooney.
Oh, my gosh.
I love Art Rooney stories.
That's right. And so Art Rooney, and you go, wow. I mean, somebody needed, they didn't need me, but somebody took the time to care. And I point point that out only because of the fact that being the family that they are and the kind of people that they are, I did, you know, when I got out of the service, you know, and I've been working out, I've been trying to get some myself back in shape. I had another operation, but anyway, so I went to training camp and, you know, limped through training camp as best I possibly could. They were kind enough to let me stay all of training camp, and then they put me on injured reserve, and I had another operation thereafter. And then I came back the following year, went through training camp again, and they put me on the taxi squad at that time, developmental squad. So they really kind of bought me 2 years to heal, to get stronger, to get, you know, to be able to come back. And so by 1972, I came back again and so was able to be in a better position. And I made the team that year, primarily on special teams, you know. So they were very, very good, very kind, being the family that they are, to allow one to, you know, have the opportunity to do something and to play. And so then you have to do something with that opportunity. And then the rest becomes history.
Rocky, we are going to have to get you back for another interview because your life is so fascinating. We're just barely scratching the surface. But let's talk about you going into the NFL after what happened to you in Vietnam. The doctor says, well, first of all, when you join the Steelers, your odds weren't that great. You go to Vietnam, and then you have two things happen. The doctors say, you know, you're never going to play football again. I would imagine your weight was not an NFL weight at the time. Were you thin going into the NFL? How did you have to get up to NFL weight status?
Well, anyway, so I knew, coming out of college, and you know, just from, you know, I weighed about 190 pounds, you know, at the time. And so I thought, okay, I needed to get to like 200 pounds, you know, to go into the NFL. That was my, for whatever reason, you know. So in when I was at Notre Dame, as college, I was putting weight on, and so I got up to 200 pounds and went into the NFL. And then when I came back from Vietnam, I weighed 165 pounds.
Oh my gosh!
You know? So then it was a matter of, you know, getting my weight back up, going back to the gym, starting to, you know, to work out as best I possibly could. And so in those, in that period of time over the years, I was able to get up to back in, by 1973 was the biggest. I weighed 218 pounds. And I bench pressed 465 pounds,
whoa,
squatted 600 pounds.
Oh my God.
And I ran the 40. Now the, my best, I mean, this is another story, but the 40 yard dash as we know it today and how important it becomes, from a measuring tool didn't exist back then. I mean, nobody ran 40 times. I mean,
right.
Nobody had a 40 times.
Cause it was kind, it's still kind of silly. It's still kind of silly.
I remember coming out of at Notre Dame, and you know, and a letter I received from one of the teams is, you know, it was if we draft you, would you play for us? Yes. Okay. What was your name? Height, weight, school, position. You had to fill out this paper. What was your 40 time? 40 time? I don't know. We never ran a 40 time, so it needed to be filled. And so I thought, oh, okay, fine. So I extrapolated my best high school 40-yard, 100-meter, 100-yard dash. My best time ever was like 10 flat. So I thought, okay, 50 yards is 5. Okay, so let's adjust for 40 yards. And I think I put down 4.3.
That's Deion Sanders speed.
Hey, Rocky. Okay, so Bronze Star. Listen, we want you back because we need to talk about you, but I want to talk about this event
right.
That a good man.
Well, this event's important.
Yeah, it's the Army-Navy game. It's going to be not this Saturday, but the next Saturday. Tony and I are going to be there. Can't wait. This is all because of a guy, a selfless, giving man by the name of Keith Camnish. I cannot tell you how much he gives back. It's constantly doing good for the neighborhood. Let's bring in country music artist J.D. Shelburne.
Hey, J.D., what's up, buddy?
He's going to be there as well. And I do want to say that this event is sold out. It's at capacity. But we wanted both of you guys on to thank you. J.D., how are you, my friend? Christmas songs are out, right?
That's right, man. Thanks so much for having me on. And, wow, what a story from Rocky Blyer. Unbelievable.
I'm still here, J.D.
I love it.
He's still there. But
the event is the Army-Navy game. It's next Saturday. I think the kickoff is either 2 or 2:30. It's one of the best games. They picked that date because it's in between the last game of the regular season and bowl games start the next week. So it's basically the only game on college football, or maybe one or two other games. That's it. So it's a huge deal. I've been to the event. I get chills thinking about the Army-Navy game. So basically, you guys have invited Rocky. Explain to me, Army and Navy vets are the only ones that are going to be in a building except for Dwight and I.
That's right. And so, Keith, obviously, you've had Keith on the show.
Sure.
He's gone out and invited the local military personnel to be able to come down. It's being held at Burnos. Mm-hmm. Pizzeria, and so we did it there, a couple years ago, to be able to come and enjoy the companionship, more importantly, to be able to enjoy the game, be able to tell stories and lies to one another about how important we were when we served our country, more importantly, and the greatest thing about this Army-Navy game, just to put it in perspective, is that it's really, I mean, it's what college football is all about.
Amen.
And that is competition. You know, it's not who's going to the pros and how many All-Americans you have on the team. It is about teamwork, what the military stands for. It's about hard work, dedication, and it's in one of these games that, I mean, the Army's got a strong team this year. They're 8-3. Navy, unfortunately, is struggling at 3-8. But it's one of those games that anything can happen within this game. And so it's really about competitiveness, about working together, about upsets and expectations. But it's our future leaders in the military who are playing against one another. And so there's a whole lot of pride that takes place in this game so that they can brag to one another later on of who won this game.
Rocky, I've spoken with Keith Camnish about this event so many times, and I asked him, because it's sold out. It's all Army and Navy at capacity. And I said, Keith, what would you want me to come out of this interview? And he said, well, out of anything, I want people to watch the Army-Navy game with their family and make it an event. And it should be, in my opinion. But let's talk to J.D. Shelburne for a second, too, because we're
right.
Hey, Rocky, we're going all day and all night, man. We're going to start
J.D., why are you playing in this?
Yeah.
Why are you going?
You do this a lot, don't you, J.D.? You constantly give back.
I do, man. That's one thing I take pride in. You know, on this event particularly, Keith Camnish and I, we've been friends for 4 or 5 years, and this is his fourth annual. I mean, he's done this. This is not his first time he's done this. I was at his very first one. I mean, Keith is a guy I met at an event. He ended up becoming a fan and then a friend, and then he started kind of throwing these events at me. Every time he'd play, he would front these events, and he'd always hire me. And just a great guy. And I asked him one day, I said, Keith, I said, why do you have so much passion for this game? Because I tell you, he talks about this game. This is not just a weekend, football game. You watch it, Saturday night, forget about it Sunday morning. This is an all-year thing for him. I asked him why he had so much passion. He told me, it just kind of stuck with me. Like, his grandfather, Carl Camnish, was the U.S. Navy, was in the Navy during World War II, and then his father, William, was in the Navy as well during 42 and 45. So, He told me growing up, with his brothers and sisters, he watched this game when they were young with his family. And he just thought, watching the game really shown true meanings of sportsmanship, teamwork, honor, commitment, those kind of things. And he's just said, a couple years ago, he was at a bar watching the Army-Navy game, and he was the only guy sitting at the bar watching the game.
Wow.
So, I'm going to – that was – I mean, for – for him to tell me that, I was like, I can't imagine how he felt. He said no one really paid attention to the game, so he wanted to host an event on his own dime.
I know.
That would bring people in to just watch this game and salute the veterans, people like Rocky. They're having Woody Williams as well. He's also having a friend of mine, Major Ed Paludio. I mean, and bringing these guys in on his own dime, paying for food, drinks, and everything. I mean, it's very kind of him to do this, and I'm honored to perform. We're going to play, you know, throughout the night, halftime. I'll sing the national anthem like he always requests, and we're just here to have a good time and be here for the veterans and just you know, provide some music in between the game, and we look forward to it. I know he's really
and JD, as a special treat, I've written a couple of songs myself.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah,
I'm
going
to get up
that.
There. No,
we yeah, we don't need
that.
JD, I'll help you with that. JD Shelburne, thank you for your time. Rocky Blyer, go ahead.
Before we let him go, follow JD Shelburne on social media. He's dropping a different Christmas song, it seems like, every other day.
Rocky Blyer, huge fan of not just your football days, but the way you lived your life, and I can't wait to meet you next Saturday during the Army-Navy game. Thank you for your time, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right, fine. Thanks,
thank you, guys.
See you guys.
See you guys.
See you, man.
Wow. Boy, what a crew. And this Keith Camnish guy, I'm telling you.
Yeah, I've known him a long time, too. Yeah, he's
done,
a great guy.
For example, he tells me I'll talk about it, but he's given to so many charities. And I said, make this a check. No, it's not about that.
He may or may not have represented me when I was a teenager.
He did represent you.
All right, be quiet. Teenager. All right, so that is next Saturday, sold-out event, but be careful for next year, or be aware for next year to get involved with that. Back after this.
If you're watching it at home, get you some Lots of Pasta.
Oh, lotsofpastalouisville.com. Go to the website, and order up for a little catering for your holiday season. Or if you're going to watch football games or basketball games, tonight's game is going to be amazing with Louisville and Michigan State. And it's reasonable. 7 o'clock. Get some food from Lots of Pasta. Forget about cooking and let them do it for you tonight. Go to lotsofpastalouisville.com or stop on by 3717 Lexington Road. That's Lots of Pasta in the heart of St. Matthews. Back after this on 790 WKRD, home for the Cards. All right, folks, 790 WKRD, the afternoon underdogs. Dave Jennings will be back tomorrow. Huge game tonight. 7:15 is the scheduled start time for Louisville, Michigan State. We got bad blood. There is good blood. There is passion. This is awesome. This is obviously one of the best coaches in the history of the game. I'm not a big fan, but let's kick his ass tonight. Mac has beaten him before. Mac's been off for 6 games. This is a lot of storylines going into tonight's game. On the big stick with Jay Billis on the call is University of Louisville Fighting Cardinal basketball team, 5-1 against 5-2 Michigan State. Well, man, let's get it on tonight. Now, you can hear the game on News Radio 840 WHAS, my other show. But we're continuing our conversation here. So keep it where you got it. And don't forget, Edlund and Edlund is your real estate agent. Their real estate company will take care of you, folks. Just go to the website, Edlund.com, E-D-E-L-E-N. You know them. They've been around 46 years. They are a full-service brokerage. And the big deal they started about a year ago, which has been a big hit, keep your equity in your pocket, okay? That's money you've earned for your home. Don't give it to a real estate agent. 1% realtor commission. You heard me right. 1% realtor commission at an outfit as big as an old and established as Edlund and Edlund is amazing. Edlund and Edlund. Go to Edlund.com or call them at 599-2800. Back after this on 790 WKRD.